Trib Live is made possible by AT&T, NRG, Christus Health, and BP.
Please join me in welcoming the Honorable Todd Staples.
And thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Good seeing you. For the record, I kind of thought Kinky Friedman should have won that primary. It had been a lot more
entertaining. Were you rooting for Kinky Friedman?
Yeah, here you go.
You've already made news. That's good, actually. let's begin, please, with the wildfires and drought. This is an issue that I know is of great concern to you, given your job. President was in town this week, and a number of people in Texas, including you, have been critical of the president for the administration's declining to make a disaster declaration in the state. Can you update us on where we are on the wildfire and the droughts, and in particular, where we are in that conversation with the feds?
Absolutely. So far in Texas, since the fire season began, we've had over 9,000 fires. Over 2.4 million acres of Texas rangeland has been devastated and charred by the wildfires. It's just unconscionable that FEMA and this administration is denying our request for a general disaster declaration. And to put it in context, just in June of 2009, the same administration approved the type of declaration request that we're asking when 9 counties out of the 77 in Oklahoma burned for about 3 days.
Yeah.
We've had wildfires that have been out of control for over 2 weeks. It's been devastating, and it was pretty unconscionable to come to Texas and not meet with those individuals who have been impacted. And prior to him making a good haul on campaign cash, I wish the Democratic donors would have said, look, do the right thing. Make the disaster declaration that we need to help our citizens respond the way they need to.
Do you have any reason for his or for the administration's decision not to declare? Can you explain it? Do you have an answer that you can give us that they've given you?
Well, it is what it is. I mean, it's indifference or it's political posturing. Who knows what the real issue is? But I'd like to remove it from that realm.
Right.
We need to appeal this decision. I think the facts point out that these are Texas taxpayer dollars that have been sent to Washington to help in these types of situations.
Right.
It is a very serious, real issue. Our local firefighters, our forestry service, our Department of Public Safety, even the Transportation Department, we've had so many people that have been working around the clock, not to mention the families that have been impacted and are devastated by the losses there.
You mentioned political posturing. You know, there are some who believe, well, in fact, the governor has said that he believes that because the president has been the target of a lot of hostility from Texas, the whole Texas versus the federal government thing has been playing out for the better part of the last 2 years, that this is in some way retaliation. Do you believe that we're at a point where the politics of this country are so petty that in the face of what is obviously a terrible disaster for Texas, that the president would retaliate politically for the attacks on him from Texas by failing to declare the state a disaster area?
I think one thing that is clear is that we have a failure of leadership there to respond to the needs that we have.
Right.
Whether it's a failure of leadership to respond to the real circumstances, to the lives that have been impacted by this loss and burning acreage, or the president coming to Texas and talking about the border being safer than it's ever been.
Yeah.
Evan, he went to El Paso, and not once did he mention the words drug cartel. He didn't mention the violence that has been happening to American citizens. And I just think it's unconscionable that he should do that because the facts are real. Just yesterday, or the day that he was here, there was a congressional hearing that Michael McCaul held in Washington, D.C. And McAllen Police Chief Victor Rodriguez said that people are afraid to go to their own property.
Right.
And Chief Rodriguez characterized that as this is un-American. The facts are real. People are being chased off their own land.
Well, in fact, we had those killings of members of the Zeta cartel, but at the Falcon Lake, just a couple days ago.
And also, the day that he was here, the facts are still unrolling, but there was a firefight on the Rio Grande where Border Patrol agents were involved in.
Yeah.
We've had Border Patrol agents killed in the line of duty in their official capacity in Mexico, but we've also had them killed in the United States of America.
Right.
And for the leader of the free world not to recognize this for what it is not the type of leadership. And I believe that our border will not be secure until we have a new occupant in the White House because they are failing to recognize these facts. Our Department of Public Safety has documented these very well.
You are a bigger fan of the last occupant of the White House than you are of this occupant, correct?
Absolutely.
Did the last occupant of the White House do anything appreciably different on our border than this occupant did?
They did increase the level and presence of troops that we've had. And look, our Border Patrol officials that are there are doing a good job.
You're not taking issue with the current people on the ground?
No, absolutely not. Yeah. We have people that are putting their lives in harm's way every day, from Border Patrol to DPS, our Texas Rangers, and local law enforcement. And we appreciate the fact that they're doing that. But we have a 2,000-mile southern border, 1,200 miles in Texas.
Yep.
We have about 8,000 Border Patrol agents. If you look at the border between North and South Korea, it's about 160 miles. You have 28,000 military personnel in South Korea today.
Right.
We need to increase
some,
this.
Some might say that that's a little bit more of a war zone than this.
I would ask you to come to the border with me, Evan, and look into the faces of these landowners who are afraid to go to their own property. 80-year-old right. people, their ancestors settled South Texas and this. And we appreciate the trading relationship we have with Mexico. It's
right.
extremely important, not only to agriculture, but the entire Texas economy. And we don't need to let this get mixed up in our relationships with Mexico, but this is about the sovereignty of the United States of America being undermined. It is very real, it's happening, and we have story after story. We have a rancher who barely escaped with his life mm-hmm. as his truck was riddled by bullets by violent drug cartel members.
Right.
This is happening.
For the reasons that you say this is an issue in the Agriculture Commissioner's purview, and I want to come to that and to the website that you put up so
you
people
bet.
Can share their stories
Good.
On this in a second, but I want to go back to this question of what the administration is not doing that it ought to be doing. A lot of people say, you and others say, the president should be doing more, the administration should be doing more, but it's typically couched in pretty generic terms. Let me ask you to get specific. Specifically, what would the Staples plan be for the president and for the administration in Texas? Specifically, what should they do and how should we pay for it?
We specifically need to ask and have delivered those 1,000 National Guard troops immediately deployed on the Texas border alone,
right.
and then to increase our presence by 3,000 Border Patrol agents. That is a consistent message that our law enforcement has delivered and
right.
our governor has developed and delivered to this administration. And it's a matter of spending priorities.
Right. Well, that, so paid for
by federal government dollars that they appropriate for national security. Look. We're in an environment today that I think a lot of people are confused about what the proper role of government is.
Right.
But I think there's one issue that no matter what your political party is, no matter what your persuasion is, we all agree that the United States Constitution and Article 4, Section 4 says that the duty of the United States government is to defend our borders. And that's what they need to do as a spending priority. That's very simple, and it shouldn't be a confusing issue.
So you don't have a specific program that you would cut or a specific source of revenue you would tap, but you say that it's just a spending priority
it's a spending
issue. We have
priority.
To figure out where the money comes from.
I'll tell you, here's an area. If,
right.
if it comes down to this, our federal government is spending $1.4 billion today giving an aid to Mexico in order to help fight the drug cartel members there.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the results on how those dollars are actually being applied.
Yeah.
Without seeing that, I would say redirect some of those dollars, use it to give to local law enforcement, local police agencies, local sheriff's departments
yep.
to supplement their forces.
So you'd
on
say
the
cut aid to cut USAID to Mexico, redirect that money.
Give it
to
our local sheriffs
our,
on our 15
our border
county
patrol.
Border. Absolutely.
Right. So in the area of border security, and then go back a second in the area of federal disaster relief. Mm-hmm. You want the federal government to do more in Texas. I thought you guys hated the federal government doing more in Texas.
I think what we all need to understand is that federal government has no tax dollars. Texas is a donor state. We
right.
send more to Washington than we receive back.
Right.
And I think the consistent cry of Texans for the last 100 years is that we can take care of our business, but we also know that we fund other things as well. We're just saying redirect those dollars back here as Texans have paid for.
So I'm clear on this. The role that you want the federal government to play in Texas is not one of them doing anything for us or managing our business. You just want our money back.
That's exactly right.
Right. So, and that includes federal stimulus money that we took the last two sessions to balance the state budget.
You know, I think all Texans would agree that we should not have engaged in continual deficit spending that adds to our national debt.
Right.
But that decision was made. Those dollars have been appropriated. Those are Texas taxpayer dollars. They ought to come back home
to Texas. Having them back and asking for federal disaster money and asking for more money for Border Patrol is not inconsistent with a message that Texas wants the federal government out of our business.
Not at all.
Okay.
And we have a good track record of delivering. We have one of the best Division of Emergency Management's in the nation. I've been there on the ground during a Columbia shuttle incident that when the Columbia space shuttle came across in my old Senate district in East Texas. When Hurricane Ike hit our shores that resulted in the biggest cattle drive in the history of North America because of all the problems, people were on the ground responding. But I'll tell you this, no Texan waited for either state or federal government before they started acting. That's the beauty of what makes Texas so strong. Right. People always step up, they show leadership, and they get things done.
On this question of the stories of people on the border, ranchers and others who you cited earlier, you put up a website under the banner of the Agriculture Department earlier this year. It's Protect. The website is protectyourtexasborder.com.
That's it.
Right. And this is a website where various people impacted by the problem of illegal immigration, the problem on the border, can share their stories.
Let me correct you there. It's really not a problem of illegal immigration.
Right.
It is a problem.
Well, these are illegal people crossing the border and causing your ranchers problems.
And what it is, our landowners on our Texas border are being terrorized, and I use that term very pointedly, because they're being terrorized. They're being chased off their own property.
Right.
I was approached by landowners who were just being victimized by these drug cartel members that are becoming more bold and more brazen in everything that they do over and over again. We have one sugar mill left in Texas, and they sent their crews out to harvest their cane, to burn their fields, and their testimony is that four people drove up in black military-type uniforms on four-wheelers and ordered them off their own property.
Yeah.
And story after story like this surfaced, we recognized that our federal government, Janet Napolitano, even our president, the director of ICE, John Morton, is coming down here to Texas and saying the border is safer than it's ever been, when we have testimony after testimony of Texans from all walks of life, from all ethnicities, who are saying this is not the case.
So you would submit, Commissioner, that website is not specifically about illegal immigration. It's only about drug cartel violence that spills over onto our side of the border.
It's about protecting our Texas border.
Right.
And illegal human trafficking is occurring there.
Yep.
We know that inland in Texas, we have many ranchers that have built ladders over their fences because they kept getting their fences cut and they'd have to go round up their cattle because of the illegal human trafficking. But the purpose of this website is to be a lookout post, to raise the awareness, to really demonstrate the real problems that we're having.
Right. But why under the auspices of the Agriculture Commissioner?
Because if somebody comes to you with a problem in Texas, I think Texas voters expect you to make quick, decisive action and to provide the assistance that they're asking for. And when I have farmers and ranchers contacting me as a statewide elected official, I have a duty and a responsibility to act quickly and decisively and to get them the level of support that they are asking for. Texas taxpayers are paying millions and millions of dollars to do a role in protecting our international border that is the function of our federal government.
But there's no other area of state government in which this function or this responsibility should more properly be housed?
Well, I think the law enforcement aspect is housed at our Department of Public Safety, and they're doing an exceptional job, and our legislature is appropriating more resources today in a time that is a very difficult time with many other needs that are there, and we're having to increase spending on our border because our federal government's not doing its job. They've utterly failed.
Now, as you know, when this website was launched, the Tribune published a story about some of the comments. You know, I mean, those of us who publish websites that have comments understand that it's the Wild West out there. You can't legislate stupid. You know, you end up essentially encouraging the worst in some people. And the reality is that this website did attract some pretty out there comments that were perceived by some, Senator Jose Rodriguez of El Paso and others, to be racist. And the question was whether the mere presence of this website was incenting bad mojo, essentially, on the part of people on a website that was under the banner of the Ag Department. You stood up very aggressively for this and said, this is not about people attacking other people on our website. Right. This is about us standing up for farmers. I've been back to the website several times since. A lot of that conversation has died down. What are you doing to ensure, though, that this is just basically not yelling fire in a crowded movie theater?
Well, we're having people who monitor that site and the comments come in to make certain. And I did very quickly respond and make certain that we even increased the protocols to ensure that nothing hateful or insightful goes on there. And we don't need to allow a few people who don't represent what we stand for here in Texas to move the debate about what the real issue is.
Yeah.
And the real issue is our southern border is not secure. The economies between Mexico and Texas and the United States is extremely important. Our border communities need a vibrant, healthy Mexico because the trade is so interdependent.
Yeah.
As Commissioner of Agriculture, I took a strong stand in wanting to have our cross-border trucking program where we can have free trade that has been such a boon for Texas. And I've not shied away from that at all, but we don't need to confuse the issues about what they're about. I wish those that have been critical would be so strong in joining with me in a bipartisan way, asking for more help. And I'm very proud that our legislature is doing that right now through Senate Concurrent Resolution 36 by Senator Williams, Senate Bill 9, in a bipartisan way and bipartisan support. We're seeing our legislature move in a direction that we need to go.
But we'll come to the Senate and your possible role in that actually in a minute here. Let me ask you about another issue that has been of interest to you and was probably the least controversial of the governor's emergency items this session, and that was eminent domain. You've been an advocate for property rights since the time that you've been elected to the legislature and especially as Commissioner of Agriculture. This was a bill that passed with relative calm compared to voter ID, compared to abortion sonogram, compared to sanctuary cities, if it passes ultimately at all. You even had Democrats joining with Republicans on this bill, but there were concerns expressed that there were loopholes where the property rights of individuals might not be protected after all because certain big interests had a stake in not seeing this bill fully enforced. Could you talk about how you view the outcome of that issue?
I think the passage of Senate Bill 18 and going to Governor Perry's desk is a tremendous victory for the property owners of this state.
Strong enough bill?
It is a very strong bill. Yeah. It advances the ball. Now, we know through time that we will look and probably need to modify, but today, in these circumstances, condemning authorities have a hammer that they can hold over the head of private property owners. And as we have growth in this state, which I welcome strongly, we've got 25 million Texans today. All the demographers tell us what those numbers will be in just the next few decades.
Yeah.
It is critically important that we put the rights of private property owners in the front of the process. And I'm very proud of the fact that the constitutional amendment that was passed in 2009, I was able to work in this capacity as Commissioner of Agriculture with the legislative leaders that passed that bill, put together a coalition of our leading land steward organizations, and that constitutional amendment was the highest, had the highest number of votes and the greatest percentage of votes of any constitutional amendment on the ballot.
Can you explain to me, I know that legislative lexicon is kind of weird, but why was this an emergency? What about this made it an emergency this session compared to, say, the budget shortfall? I mean, there's a lot of conversation about these items and why these items as opposed to others were emergencies.
We've seen how bills die in any legislative session.
Right.
And this is an issue that has been debated.
We may see some die today.
We probably will.
Yeah.
There are some that have died 2 weeks ago that people haven't recognized yet, I'm sure.
No one's taken the pulse of those bills. Right. Yeah.
Some are happy about that here today,
yeah,
I would
think. Yeah.
But this was
about the fact that the Republicans, let's say it, had such high watermark numbers of members that this was a session in which the numbers allowed this bill to be passed, and so we better put it to the head of the line. Let's not let it get stuck in the back behind, you know, the log jam that typically happens this time of the session.
And I think it sends the right message about Texas being a welcoming environment. It says bring your capital to Texas, bring your jobs. Our laws are going to protect your home and your land.
Yeah.
And that's just a good, positive message because we know around the country, we had a California delegation visit Texas just a few weeks ago.
Right.
We had an Afghanistan delegation visit Texas on the day that it was announced that Osama bin Laden was killed.
Yep.
Texas is a place that people look to as a good economy, as where we think through ideas, we have tough and vigorous debates. I welcome that.
Yeah.
And that bodes us well.
If this bill had been passed several years ago, would we have ever talked about a Trans-Texas Corridor? Would the Trans-Texas Corridor have been possible in an era of eminent domain legislation?
The Trans-Texas Corridor was flawed because of these loopholes and problems in our laws protecting the rights of property owners.
Right.
So the debate could have very well been differently, but it wasn't.
So you were opposed to it before?
Opposed to
eminent domain? To a Trans-Texas Corridor.
The concept of the Trans-Texas Corridor was something that's right, I was. I mean, nobody in the legislature, when I was a member of the Senate, we give agencies tools.
Right.
It depends on how agency used those tools, and the TxDOT used it in a way that was contrary to what our intent and will was.
Okay.
And that was restricted and taken back.
All right. Well, let's jump into the pool of 2014 politics, which I've just been dying to get into from the beginning.
So Me too.
Let's get there. You are a candidate for lieutenant governor only if the current lieutenant governor steps aside to take a seat in the United States Senate or to do some other job.
I will be running for lieutenant governor in 2014 based on the circumstances we know today.
Would you run against lieutenant governor Dewhurst in a primary?
And I would not run against governor Dewhurst for lieutenant governor.
Is that the only?
I think governor Dewhurst is doing such a good job, though, that the people of Texas should consider him for some other office. And
right.
I encourage him to do that.
It's not that you want him gone, but he's doing such a good job.
Right.
Well played, sir. you managed to both push him aside and not look like a jerk. That's actually a real trick, isn't it? Is there any other circumstance in which you would not run for that job?
I don't see it. Look, the way I see this, 2014 is going to be a new time in Texas history. I think Texans are going to be looking for new leaders to emerge as we face new challenges and as current occupants move on and do different things.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of my record in both the House and the Senate. Very proud of the fact that I've been one of the, of all the statewide elected officials today, have one of the most conservative voting record as a member of the legislature.
Yep.
Also have a reputation of getting things done and trying to find solutions that moves our state forward.
Yep.
And 2014 are going to be a lot of challenges in our state. I'm excited about those challenges and look forward to a very vigorous debate on what those best solutions are for Texas.
Well, let's talk about the guy in the current job for a second before we talk about the other people who might want to get in the way of you in that job in 2014. You know, there's always a debate about Governor Dewhurst. There has been since he was first elected to office. Is he an authentic conservative? Is he sufficiently conservative? Would you weigh in on that? Because obviously, you know, I assume that you're not running to be Dewhurst Light or to be Dewhurst the Second. You're running to be you.
That's right.
So there may be differences between the two of you, but would you talk about Governor Dewhurst's tenure and what you think of it?
Well, when I was a member of both the House and the Senate, as Governor Dewhurst was there and as Governor Perry was there, we've passed meaningful tort reform. We've made certain that taxes remain low.
Yep.
I think that is a very strong, positive record. And as Lieutenant Governor, people can know that I will insist on balancing our budget with no new taxes, that I will make certain that public education is a number one priority, that our public safety is our number one priority, and that we have a Texas solution to the challenges that face us.
But how has he done? That's my question. Is he sufficiently conservative? You're a very conservative guy. Is he sufficiently conservative?
Governor Dewhurst has delivered on the conservative issues that face Texans. The record demonstrates that.
Right. So he's sufficiently conservative.
Governor Dewhurst has delivered on conservative issues.
But that's not a yes
and
or a no.
Absolutely.
He is sufficiently conservative.
Yes.
So will you be endorsing him over Ted Cruz and Michael Williams, who have another point of view about this?
I'm endorsing Todd Staples for Lieutenant Governor 2014.
So you're not
going to endorsing. I am endorsing Lieutenant Governor to look at these other avenues. I think he'd be a great United States Senator.
But you're not endorsing him in the primary.
I think Lieutenant Governor should seek Lieutenant for a United States Senate. I think it'd be great.
All right. Well, let me ask you about the other people who are talking about running. Jerry Patterson considers himself quite a conservative fellow, as you well know. And Susan Combs is a prolific fundraiser, has run very successful races statewide. You expect both of those two to be challengers in the lieutenant governor's race?
Sure not. I don't think they will, do you, Evan?
Well, I do think they will. Do you think they will?
Look, I welcome any and all competition in running for lieutenant.
You're the only formally declared candidate at the moment.
That's exactly right. And whoever the candidates are, I look forward to a vigorous debate on how we can make certain we move our state forward and solve the challenges that we have today.
Is Comptroller Combs' candidacy for lieutenant governor compromised in any way by the data breach that we've all read about at the Comptroller's office over the last several weeks?
I have never seen an issue written on by every major news organization in the state of Texas and nationally criticizing the way that problem was handled the way it was. It is a very serious issue. The personal identity of 3.5 million people has been compromised. We don't know today to what extent. There are emails that have not been released. The Attorney General is investigating. The FBI is investigating.
What emails are you referring to that have not been released?
There was a news article about certain emails that have not been released in a request for public information.
You're referring to the Patty Hart story this morning in the Hearst papers?
No, I think that one today.
Today. Those did
release the fact that there was an attempt to divert the problems by blaming it on
other
agencies.
Blaming the agencies that...
That's not the type of leadership that we need for Texas. It is very unfortunate. Right. It is very serious. I've received letters as head of an agency, letters as a state employee. My employees have at the Department of Agriculture.
Has your information personally been compromised?
I got a letter.
You did?
And who knows what really happened? I had one employee that told me yesterday they never received a letter, they never was contacted, and they continuously reading the information about this, finally they called in and said their data was in fact disclosed.
But they never received the letter.
But they never received
the letter. So had you been the comptroller in this case, would you have stepped forward on day one as the comptroller did about a week later, and would you have taken personal responsibility for this?
It is very important that leaders step forward and show leadership when you know something happened.
So you would have stepped forward and taken personal responsibility?
I think when you're driving down the street and you see someone's house on fire and flames coming out the window, you don't need to drive around the block for 2 weeks and figure out who started the fire. You need to go in there and get the people out of the house.
Is her candidacy compromised?
It's a very serious issue, and the voters will have to determine the impact on that.
How do you get to the right of Jerry Patterson?
Who's saying that Jerry Patterson's to the right of anybody?
I don't know. I'm asking you. Are you the most conservative candidate in the race if Patterson's in the race?
If you look at the legislative voting history of any current elected statewide official that has been scored while they've been in the legislature, I've got the most conservative voting record. I'm the only one that's gotten a Fighter for Free Enterprise Award by the Texas Association of Business, a Civil Justice Leadership Award by Texans for Lawsuit Reform. I have consistently reflected what I think to be the values and interests of the people of Texas, and I've done it in a way that has helped resolve big issues. Carrying the workers' compensation reform bill while I was in the Senate was no small task,
right,
but it was an important thing to do to make certain that we can continue to add jobs to this state. The last time it was taken up, Governor Bullock had to threaten to suspend the two-thirds rule in order to get it passed through the Senate. We got it with 31 votes. It wasn't easy, but I did it in a way that maintained my values and what I think the conservative values of the people of Texas are, but I did it in a way that let everyone have a say in the process.
Do you have any concern about a member of the Senate elected by his or her peers to be the interim lieutenant governor, assuming that you get your wish and Governor Dewhurst becomes Senator Dewhurst? We may be looking at Lieutenant Governor Ogden or Lieutenant Governor Nelson or Lieutenant Governor Corona. You have any concern about that person going into a race like this one with an incumbent's advantage?
No.
Because?
I don't. I am the best person to serve in 2014 for lieutenant governor. I think I have.
Regardless of circumstance.
Absolutely. All 31 members of the Senate are great folks.
Yeah.
I've served with many of them. I think they're very talented.
Yeah.
But I've served in a statewide capacity. I've served in both the House and the Senate and local office. And I'm prepared to meet the challenges that we have in this great state.
All right, Commissioner, we have about 5 minutes left. I'd like to engage you in a little game show speed round.
Ooh.
On issues that if you were lieutenant governor, you would have to weigh in on.
They told me it's time to leave.
No. You've seen these before. I'm very nice about this stuff. Don't worry about it. So let's go.
You
can give me long answers or short answers, but I want to ask you about a couple things that would be in your purview as lieutenant governor.
Okay.
Two-thirds rule, for or against?
For it. I think it's a very important tool. It's been used in this Texas in this state for 100 years.
Except when they don't feel like it.
Well, I think history shows that it has been suspended time and again. But here's the real issue. If you're not for big government, if you want to be able to tap the brakes on the process, as a conservative, if you want to slow things down, having that two-thirds rule is a very good rule. But like all rules, there are circumstances where other rules are used as well.
Right.
And you have to get the business of the people of Texas done.
Right.
And there are some circumstances that history has shown that it doesn't work out for whatever reasons that might be, but as a general purpose, I think the two-thirds rule is
so
a good one.
So, as lieutenant governor, would you have permitted the two-thirds rule to be pushed to the side for voter ID?
Yes. If you cannot, after trying and trying, get it done, and let me tell you why. In Afghanistan today, to vote, you get photographed, you get fingerprinted, and you get frisked.
Right.
To walk into that voting booth to cast your ballot.
Right.
Evan, I had the opportunity just a few weeks ago to attend the first naturalization ceremony that I'd ever attended in my life. I saw 984 people from 105 different countries around this globe take the oath to become a United States citizen. These are very serious issues that we have, and that we have something special in America.
Right, but with all due respect,
when it comes to voter ID, we need to make certain that who is voting is who they are.
With all due respect, leaving voter ID aside, what is the point of having a two-thirds rule if it's only applied when you have enough votes to get past it?
So are you thinking that there are rules that you never change or you never modify?
No,
but
the issue with the two-thirds rule has been historically and currently that the folks who are in power, and it could be Democrats at some point, so the Democrats have to be careful not to get over their skis on this. But there's no point in having a tradition if you just push it aside when the issue on which you are about which you are concerned doesn't meet up with the votes that you've got in the Senate.
Before every legislative session, the House and Senate members, this is not something in our state constitution. It is a rule adopted by the members of the Senate before each legislative body. Every time the House members meet, they get together, they have meetings, and they determine what the rules are going to be for this next session.
Right.
And that is in the prerogative of those members that are duly elected by the people
of the members.
I prefer the two-thirds rule, but I do agree that there are circumstances, and throughout the history of Texas, it is shown that it's been suspended in certain circumstances.
Okay. I did say it was a speed round, and I'm already off my game on that. Senate budget.
I thought that was pretty speedy for the Senate issue.
You think so?
Don't you?
Yeah. Senate budget versus House budget this time. Which do you prefer?
Since the Senate budget only cuts us by 40%, and the House budget cuts us by 45%, I'm for the Senate budget here, Evan.
You are?
Yeah.
But as a practical matter, the Senate budget is dead, isn't it?
I think here's what I believe. Every conference committee, and I've been on many of them, have to get in there and look at the side-by-sides and see what makes sense.
Yep.
I believe at the end of the day, under the limited revenues that we have, that our House and Senate members will craft a budget that meets the spending needs that we have on the next 2 years. Right. Look,
but you like the Senate budget better.
I think the Senate has looked at ways to address some issues that need to be addressed. Yes.
In a way that you prefer to the House budget.
And I think we'll probably go more toward the Senate than what the House has done. But here's the deal at the end of the day. Washington has shown us what deficit spending will do. And we have to balance our budget within the available revenue stream that we have, and we have to grow our way out of the economy, out of this recession. Recessions are temporary, tax hikes are permanent. And I think both the House and the Senate have taken the appropriate posture in moving forward and solving this budget dilemma that we have.
What about the rainy day fund, which obviously was a hot potato during the whole session up until the very last on the Senate budget? There was discussion of whether the rainy day fund should be used to pay for the Senate budget, which is more generous in certain ways than the House budget. Would Lieutenant Governor Staples have advocated for use of the rainy day fund in this session to pay for the next biennium's budget?
I think I agree with what the Senate ultimately did in not relying on the rainy day fund. Let me tell you what Lieutenant Governor Staples would do about the rainy day fund.
Yeah.
I think it is a very good tool. And you know that every session, the Legislative Budget Board sets a rate of growth that the spending cannot exceed based on the economic circumstances and what's forecasted. We have a rainy day fund that is a very prudent fiscal management tool. I think we need, at the beginning of each session, also to determine what we think the balance of that rainy day fund should be at the end of that biennium that's being budgeted. Let's get it out of the realm of the political football field, and let's use that fund for what its intended purpose is as a fiscal management tool, a tool that should recognize we need a sound bond rating for the state of Texas.
Yep.
We know our federal government's juvenile spending practices has resulted in the long-term credit rating of the United States government being downgraded from stable to negative. We cannot allow that to happen. So criteria that I would look at, among others, would be to maintain a sound fiscal bond rating. We need to allow for contingencies such as hurricanes that happen, contingencies like wildfire, and look at what the rate of growth and what the overall economy is doing. So I would like to see the rainy day fund, just as our rate of growth is established, to let's determine what that rainy day fund should be at the end of that period as well.
There are a lot of people, Commissioner, as you know, who look at the budget shortfall we have and what are unprecedented cuts to social programs, and they say, if it's not raining now, when's it ever going to be raining?
That's right. We have difficult circumstances today. My agency...
But you still wouldn't touch it.
My agency last week had to give notices to over 10% of our workforce, but that their jobs aren't funded for the next year.
But you'd rather leave the money in the state savings account than save those jobs or save the jobs of public school teachers, potentially?
You can't solve short-term problems without long-term thinking.
Right.
And we do no one a disservice if we put our state in fiscal matters that causes even greater danger 2 years from now. So the way to solve that is to forecast what that's going to be, just like we do the rate of growth, mm-hmm. and to remove that from the political arena. Today, the Senate budget, planning on using the rainy day fund and not using a higher portion of the rainy day fund, is still at the same level of spending, so we're still there in terms of spending priorities.
All right, let me ask you about another thing here. Campus carry. You've been a big advocate for gun rights over the years. You know that Senator Wentworth, in the end, relentless as ever, got that bill attached to another
creative,
bill.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. All he had was creativity left there at the end, right? So it now looks like campus carry will pass over the objection of the majority of leaders of higher education institutions. So explain to them and to us why, despite their objections, this is a good bill.
Well, I think the people that ultimately get to say are the voters of Texas. And those are the ones that we're ultimately responsible to, not to any one particular group.
So make it a constitutional referendum.
Well, the Constitution gave the legislature the authority to make those decisions, and the people in the legislature have the votes.
So the voters' support for this bill is implied?
Absolutely, by virtue of the members who are making those decisions. The Second Amendment of the United States Constitution is very important. We cannot allow the irresponsibility of a few to impair the liberties of the many. And I don't have a problem with that. I remember being a member of the legislature when concealed handgun legislation was passed, and there were all types of comments about all the dangers that would happen. None of that ever proved true. None of it did.
So you don't have any concerns that are specific to campus carry as opposed to concealed carry?
Look, people have to be licensed, they have to be trained, they have to be educated, they have to know the consequences for inappropriately using our laws. I'm a concealed handgun carrier. And licensee, there's no problems there that I've seen that have been articulated in a way that should cause the public concern or our higher education officials concern. And we haven't gotten much time to talk about public education and its role and what we're going to do with the millions of children in Texas that are not going to four-year colleges right now, unfortunately.
How about redistricting? Again, under the lieutenant governor's purview, you got to preside over the Senate. You may well be lieutenant governor, if you serve a second term, you're elected in 2014, you may preside over a session in which redistricting is an issue. Senator Seliger put out maps yesterday that take it from 1912, ideally to 2011 for the Republicans. A number of Democrats are upset about the way Travis County is being manhandled, about the way Fort Worth is being changed. What do you think about that?
Well, I think redistricting is political in nature. I carried the congressional redistricting bill in 2003. I remember after I was fortunate enough to be the author of that bill, I had someone come by my office and they said, I remember in 1970, they thought, who could we get to carry redistricting? And they said, we'll give it to Joe. He gets along with everybody. And he looked at me and said, and when he got through, he didn't have a darn friend left in the whole building.
Right.
And so redistricting is a tough process. Seliger is working through this process, and it's just by political in nature. I think most people would argue we really have 20 Republican seats and 11 today and just had some issues
so
on one
side. Wendy Davis's election was an anomaly?
I think so.
And you think that seat will turn?
I think so.
You expect to come back? All right. Yeah. Well, we are out of time. I would like to talk about public ed and other things, but maybe we'll have that in the question and answer
good.
Portion. Commissioner Staples, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's good to be with you this morning.
Appreciate it.
All right.
We will have a microphone walked around, and those of you who have questions, we ask that you raise your hand, and we'll be happy to have your question addressed to Commissioner Staples. And I've got other ones if you all don't have them. So, questions, sir.
Hi, sir.
Hi.
You made a comment about how we need to look for long-term solutions versus short-term solutions. How is cutting the budget and cutting spending specifically for higher education not a short-term solution, but a long-term solution, especially concerning census data that we have that's basically indicating that a majority of workforce is going to be unskilled, uneducated in the future?
I may ask you to extend that to public ed, because obviously both those issues involve making cuts today and looking ahead to the long-term future of Texas.
Good. Well, thank you for that question. Education spending should be the number one priority of state government. I truly believe that, and as a state senator and a state representative, I chose to make that a priority in the committee assignments that I saw and the bills that I worked on.
What does that mean that you made it a priority?
I served on Senate Finance and I served on Senate Education. I was recognized as a champion for children by the Equity Center. because I want an accountable and an efficient education system, but I also want one that is funded to meet the basic needs. The situation that we're in today, we have limited revenue stream. Raising taxes to solve this short-term problem only creates a greater problem. Illinois chose to raise their state tax on businesses. Caterpillar, an almost 100-year company, very seriously started looking to relocate their headquarters. And so we have to make decisions with the resources that we have and to target that spending where we get the greatest results. That's what we have to do with education spending.
But you would be, invariably, Commissioner, I don't want to make any assumptions, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that you would be supporting a budget this session if you were still in the legislature that would be cutting public education by billions of dollars.
What you'd be doing and what this legislature is doing is targeting our available revenue to the priorities that we have and not asking taxpayers to spend more. Everyone can have efficiencies and look for modernization and ways to do things. We have to continuously do that. Right. We also have to be smart in the way that we do things. As Commissioner of Agriculture, I had 40 hours at what we call Harvard on the Hill back home at our community college, Trinity Valley Community College. I'm a very big believer in the role of community colleges in educating our citizens. Kilgore College in Northeast Texas did a survey that said 80% of the workforce needs in their areas does not require a four-year degree, but it needs advanced training.
And yet the community college graduation rate in the state is somewhere down around my ankles.
And so what we need to do is find ways to develop partnerships between our four-year institutions, our community and technical colleges, and our high schools. I created a program called Parallel Pathways to Success at the Department of Agriculture through our economic development initiatives, through savings that we had in our budget that I challenged my staff to come up with. We gave away five $100,000 grants to community colleges and school districts. South Texas Community College, Rio Grande City, they have a dual enrollment medical sciences academy. Kids whose parents never finished high school are finishing high school with college courses, becoming a dental hygienist. This is the type of approach that we need to have if we're going to train the workforce and we don't just simply think about it, it's 4 years or nothing. We need parallel pathways to educating the kids of this state.
But when you come back to talking about efficiency in public education, let me say again, you would be voting for a budget that would be either $4, $5, $6 billion or $7 to $8 billion down in public education. And while you say there are efficiencies in everything, we'll grant
sure
you that,
are.
Absolutely. What you're seeing right now around the state are school teachers and school administrators being laid off as part of this effort to incur the costs of or to deal with the cuts being mandated by the state. Is cutting school teachers the kind of efficiency that you're talking about?
If you have limited revenues, you have to make decisions on what you have.
Right.
Education spending should be our number one priority. We need to look for ways to mitigate those circumstances. But we would hurt those teachers even more if we engaged in deficit spending, if we spent dollars that we don't have, or if we raised taxes that would drive those jobs out of our state. We just simply can't do that.
Mr. Heflin, plug your ears on this one. Why don't we need more revenue? Why is the conversation not about needing more revenue? Maybe our needs for public education, some will say, are simply greater than what we have right now. And if Texas wants to be first and best at everything, shouldn't we be looking for more revenue to spend on public education?
If you look at the revenue streams in the history of the state of Texas, it continuously has increased substantially.
Right.
And our revenue stream will increase. We will grow our way to meet our needs. That's what we have to do.
We are currently 42nd, I believe, out of 50 states in spending per capita on public education. By some estimations, we will be 50th out of 50 states per capita spending on public ed by the time these cuts are over, Senate budget or House budget. You okay with that?
If spending was a measurement of success, Washington, D.C. school kids would be doing better than anyone else, and they're not.
Zing. Another question for Commissioner Staples.
I have a question.
Mr. Nichols. Let me let your microphone come to you. Yes, sir.
Your agency is responsible for weights and measures accuracy in the state, which is a very important function. In this age of ever-increasing gasoline prices, do you believe you have the tools necessary to assure fair measure for purchase of gasoline in the state?
I told my staff if gas goes to $4 a gallon to take my name off that sticker on the pump.
Is that it?
If it goes down to $2 a gallon, we're going to put my picture on that sticker. Right?
You may catch a break, actually, right? It looks like gas prices, they're saying, may go down as much as 50 cents a gallon by the end of the summer. Is that right?
That'd be great news. Yeah. And we need more domestic production of gasoline. We need to be drilling in our own Gulf Coast instead of sending those rigs elsewhere. And that's a whole other issue. And we need a regulatory agencies that provide certainty and don't drive jobs out of America. At the Texas Department of Agriculture, I think our weights and measures work is a good example of how to give fair and stable regulations in a way that we can grow our economy. We know our population's growing. Rather than asking the legislature to fund 100 new positions of inspectors, what we're doing is using technology in a way that we can enable our inspectors to do more. And we're looking at a risk-based analysis where we can target the resources to where they need to be. Evan, when I became ag commissioner, the penalties for non-compliance were only $25 per device. And at almost $4 a gallon, that's not too much of a disincentive.
What are the penalties now?
We quadrupled those for the first minimum violation, right. And we're looking at doing some other things now. But
who is the Commissioner of Agriculture who had a $25 penalty?
Previous commissioner.
Yeah. You intend to run against her as an insufficiently aggressive ag commissioner as well as an insufficiently aggressive comptroller?
I intend to run for as Lieutenant Governor of Texas as the person that is a leader who's given decisive actions and has a record of deserving of serving the people of Texas.
And also, you're sneaky. You can run as sneaky because you're just getting little digs in there. I think that's actually good. Other questions?
Let's characterize it some way else besides sneaky.
No, sneaky is actually, I think sneaky is a compliment, honestly. In my business, it's a compliment. Other questions for the commissioner? Representative Heflin, this ought to be a good one.
Maybe I might let him ask it, then I may let him answer it. Well, how about that?
All right.
You've indicated that you have a desire to be lieutenant governor. And it's easy to generalize why you might want to do that. But what's one issue that you would handle differently from how it's being handled today when you become lieutenant governor? Something specific.
I hat tip you, Representative. That's an excellent question. Put some air between you and Governor Dewhurst. What is an issue, as he says, on which you and Governor Dewhurst differ?
Well, I am not running against David Dewhurst for lieutenant governor, so you're not going to have me here today comparing myself to any of those individuals.
You're going to let him get away with that, Mr. Chairman?
But I can tell you this. I think my record in the legislature has shown that I tackle these issues head on. People can know that as lieutenant governor that I will balance a budget and I will not be for tax increases for this state. That I will make public education spending a priority, that I will make public safety a priority. I have a record of doing that, and I will continue to do that as I seek to serve the people of Texas. I'll tell you what, there's a big difference.
Okay. What's the big, come on, drum roll. What is it?
If we're starting at 11 o'clock, we're going to start at 11 o'clock in the Texas Senate.
You're right. I see it now. Look, I don't want to get in the way of your campaign people. You're paying them, but I'm going to give you your slogan for the next campaign for free. Todd Staples, he's Dewhurst but prompt.
I'm a morning person, and that's the way I like to do things.
All right. How about the temperature of the room? You got a point of view about that?
It'll get heated at times.
It will? Okay. Yeah. That's two differences. You got two, Talmadge. Okay. Other questions? Right there. Ma'am. Amanda should have had her track shoes on today. All right. Ma'am.
Well, I actually would like to help Commissioner Staples answer the chairman's question. Because you haven't said anything about broadband and the work that you've done there with Connected Texas. You are the only state-level official that's had any interest in getting the state connected. I think you should take credit for that.
What about the challenge of making broadband access to all parts of the state a cost piece and all the other challenges you've had to get over. Talk a little bit about
that. Well, I did ask for the Texas Department of Agriculture to be that agency for the point person to do it. And the way that we did it was to reach out to our stakeholders and bring them in the room and to develop a strategy that's good for Texas. And I think that's a reflection of the way that I like to do business, whether it's our property tax issues or it's finding technology to benefit our rural communities, and which is an economic development issue and creating access all across Texas. And it's been a real good process to work with those stakeholders to go out after those dollars and to put them for projects to work right here in Texas.
What's the biggest problem on that issue that you've yet to overcome?
Well, our federal government gave us the money, and then they said, and by the way, after we're going to do that, here's some money that you can go map your state with. So they put the dollars out there before we did the mapping process, which is a backwards way to do that. And that's been tough to deal with.
You have a favorite candidate against President Obama in 2012?
You see, anybody but Obama, I think.
ABO?
Yeah, I think it's
You're for the ABO candidate?
Hey, look.
Is there anybody you wouldn't support?
This president campaigned in a way that he's totally different than what he's governed in.
But you didn't support him last time.
You know, I didn't, did I?
Right.
Look, what he's offering is not a direction that our country needs to go. He is a very good speaker. I think he is genuine, but his policies are wrong for our country. He wants to take us in directions that the American people don't want to go. And look, if the people of
Trib Live is made possible by AT&T, NRG, Christus Health, and BP.